the Saturday panel on Off the Ball.
In association with the Air Sport app, allowing you to cast your favourite sporting action from your tablet or mobile phone straight to your TV.
You're very welcome along to our Saturday panel. We are building up to Ireland against England, the Grand Slam decider. We'll be back to Twickenham to Andy Dunn between now and kickoff at 2:45 for plenty more analysis from the stadium. But I'm delighted to be joined in studio by former Munster and Ireland player Ian Dowling. How are you?
All good now, yeah. Thanks for
having
us.
And Grand Slam winner, Mike Ruddock. Never leaves you.
Long time ago. Not that long ago.
What, 13 years now?
Yeah, probably about that, yeah. Okay. No, I still remember it. It was a great day, all right.
I'd say it was. Do you get an extra medal for being a Grand Slam winner rather than just the Six Nations champion?
No, but I got two hugs from Catherine Jenkins and one from Charlotte Church. No, my wife didn't mind the first hug, but when I went back for the second hug... Yeah.
When you went back, I'd say it was the key word.
I went back, yeah. So she wasn't very impressed with the second hug. Really.
Yeah. Does it feel different? Does it, around Wales, was it, and I know it was a long time, was it like 27 years or something between Grand Slams? Like the difference between just being, because Ireland have won Six Nations Championships under Joe Schmidt, but no Grand Slam since 2009, only two Grand Slams ever. Does it feel as though it's at a very different level? It's a very different level of achievement?
Well, it is. It is. That's why you become so special, and that's why, you know, it's very difficult to win them, you know, every year. But certainly going back to the Welsh one, I mean, Wales, I grew up, you know, in the 60s, 70s, Wales seemed to be winning Grand Slams every 2 minutes. So suddenly there was this barren period, and it went on for 27 years before Wales won a Grand Slam. And there was a sort of an expectation towards the end there that it was going to happen, and there seemed to be a lot of momentum, and I can sort of feel that with what's been happening and building in Ireland over the last couple of seasons, and particularly this season. It seems that sort of momentum and that air of inevitability about it, if you like. And of course, it's going to be tough, and we can talk about that later. But, you know, the crowd were, you know, well, it was, there was another two or three stadiums you could have filled them outside of the ground. They put up sort of, you know, screens and big screens all around the city, and people were congregating. I mean, whoever was selling bootleg booze that day was making a fortune, you know. And I remember talking to Reggie Corrigan fairly recently, actually, and he was telling me that, you know, the Irish team prepped really well and got on the bus to drive to the stadium, and he said it took them about an hour and a half to go half a mile, you know, because the crowds were immense. And he sort of, he couldn't say it and he didn't want to say it, but he sort of knew deep down it would take a hell of a performance to, you know, to sort of beat this type of vibe. And if Wales brought that type of vibe, then obviously he felt it would be very difficult to counter. And I just sort of feel with St. Patrick's Day and everything the way it is and that vibe going, there's something similar for building for Ireland.
In many ways, it feels like it's been a quick 9 years since Ireland won the Grand Slam, but these chances don't come around very often. Like, if you were a player in that dressing room, do you want it built up into that thing that this is St. Patrick's Day, this is Twickenham? I don't think a team has won a Grand Slam at Twickenham since France in 1981. Like, these opportunities, you've got to seize them. Do you want that extra pressure on a day like this?
I think that there's been a bit of a release of the pressure with them obviously winning last weekend, so you can really enjoy the build-up this weekend. They're a bit unshackled in terms of if they win this weekend, it just adds to everything. Obviously, it's in a whole other level with, like, Paddy's weekend and, like you're saying, the vibe, the build-up, but it's going to be something special anyway coming into the weekend.
Did you want that Wales team on the final day against Ireland when you're going for the Grand Slam to play more on the emotion of the occasion, or were you looking for more calm heads in the dressing room before you're walking out onto the pitch?
No, I think it was very calm. I think it was just a really good vibe about the whole week. You know, we didn't train a huge amount. In fact, we moved beds out of the hotel up to the training. We have an indoor training area in Wales at the Vale of Glamorgan. And right. we moved sort of beds alongside the training area.
Why'd you do that?
Pardon?
Why?
Well, we just felt that the games had been quite physical, the loading had been quite high, the contacts for each player had been quite high, as you would know as a physio. So, you know, sometimes you just need to, you know, you need to peak then for a game and make sure that you're not overtrained, that there's something left in the tank at the end of a tough competition. So basically we were cutting back on the amount of training. We were looking more at walkthroughs, jogthroughs, knowing your role, being precise about what we were doing, the clarity of the communication, the small talk, the detail was the most important thing, rather than loads of volume. Yeah. You know, we covered that off earlier in the campaign. So, you know, if guys felt tired in between training, they could go and lie on the beds by the side of the training area, you know. I probably had a couple of snoozes there myself as well halfway through it. But, so the guys were nice and relaxed. We did our homework. Before the campaign had started, I'd asked guest coaches to come in and give us an overview of each team from the outside as well, to see how they would track them through the course of the campaign and come back and give us a...
Were these coaches from the club teams in Wales?
Yeah, from the regional teams. Okay. And I seem to remember Sean Hawley, who was the Ospreys assistant coach at the time, giving us some feedback on the Irish team.
Right.
And I'm bound to confidentiality, so I'm not going to tell you what he said. But, you know, it was
13 years ago, come on.
Well, I can't remember this way. no, I think the feeling was we could raise the tempo against the Irish team and get into them and make them run around a little bit. And that's what we did. But the point I'm making is there wasn't any shouting or bawling or emotion. It was all very systematic. It was all very well planned. It was quite relaxed. And that's why I go back to the vibe. It just felt really good, you know, and I'm sure Joe was sitting there and the boys are sitting there thinking, right, we've done a really good job so far. It feels really good. It's going to be a hell of an effort from another team to stop this momentum. Does that make sense?
Mm.
Yeah, I think you touched on a good point there as well about the, obviously taking the beds quite close to the training area and all that. It's a great idea, but we've already seen the player management setup that we have here in Ireland compared to England is obviously something that's kind of standing to us now. I think we're seeing that we're getting the best out of our players, whereas if you look at the likes of England, they're looking quite fatigued, lethargic going into these games. And it's been already broached on, I think, by the likes of Billy Vinopolo, and even if you look at I think it's Farrell, in terms of he's double digits in terms of games played, whereas you look at the likes of Johnny Sexton and Conor Murray, as soon as the job is nearly done, they've been whipped from the pitch. And even the likes of Rob Kearney during the week, just being rested up, just given downtime, whatever it takes to keep him as fresh as can be so he can perform to the best of his ability at the weekend. And that's one of the, I suppose, the perks that we have here in terms of our setup.
Yeah, you're spot on here. And again, I can talk from good experience here, because I was a director of Rugby Worcester Warriors, and I know what the English system is like. I was there for 3 years. So, you're on the back of a Lions tour. The player management system in Ireland means that the guys are monitored, the amount of
minutes they play,
the contacts they play, the GPS times of training, all this, you know, is all factored in. Whereas the English boys go back, now I know they've got an elite squad and I know the clubs get compensated to a certain degree, but the club owner still wants his best players out there. And, you know, there's relegation in that league. It's hugely intense, you know, it's very, very intense. They can't really afford to rest players that much.
Mm.
And they always seem, this season, they've seemed to be burnt out in Europe. They've battered each other in that Premiership. You can go on about the quality of the rugby, but the reality is, if you're in that lower region, or if you don't make the playoffs, you know, it affects the cash flow, it affects the business, as well as the support, etc. And, you know, and then you come into this tail end of the season, and they've bashed each other all the way through the league season, and now they've got to try and raise it up in the English jersey. So I think their model, this is exactly, you're right, Ian, I think the Irish model, this is the perfect opportunity to prove it's the right model.
It's a really interesting point, because I guess the money that has come into the Premiership in the last 2-3 seasons with the new TV deal as well means you can't afford to be relegated. We see what it's done with Bristol, who seem to be trying to start again from the beginning and putting in the building blocks with Pat Lamb and all of that. But it means that that split between club and country is probably getting even greater. Like when you were director of rugby at Worcester, was there constant conflict with the England coaching staff, or was there an understanding that we all have to work together here? Are you just simply thinking, listen, as long as Worcester are doing well, I couldn't care less what happens when they go off in England?
No, there wasn't a huge amount of conflict, but of course we didn't have a huge amount of international players, current international players anyway. But I think that, you know, the communication was quite good from that point of view. There was no difficulties to our end, but we weren't hugely sort of disadvantaged by it. But I could just knew from being involved with the competition how important every game was, and how much pressure our club owners are putting on their coaches, obviously to make sure they perform. And whereas in obviously in the Celtic or the Pro 14, whatever it's called these days, you know, there's conferences, there's latitude, there's rest periods, is rotations, is a little bit less intensity to it, because there's no relegation.
Yeah, we've seen a perfect example just recently with Alan Gaffney when he came out and spoke about George North when they were asked why wasn't George North lining out, and his answer was, well, you're better off asking George that, you know. It was pretty much they were looking for George North to play, but for
physically,
whatever,
he just wasn't right.
It's either that or it's, you know, he's just coming back into the fold.
Because I was wondering if maybe Eddie Jones, and look, they won the championship last year and he seemed to get things by and large right, but if he was maybe struggling to adapt to that system within English rugby. He was coming from Japan, where he probably had pretty much open access to the players whenever he wanted, because some of the stuff he's done during this campaign seems quite strange in terms of like bringing in the Georgian scrum for training sessions mid-championship. Like, that sort of stuff might work at a different time of the year, where you can learn a lot technically and you can beat up your front row if you want, and you can test them mentally on top of that as well. But in the middle of a Six Nations, like, does that not catch up with you?
Look, I'm a big scrum fan. If I was like a swimmer, I'd be scrumming every day, so you're talking to the wrong guy. No, I think that, you know, I don't think that's the problem. I think it's just coming on the back of a Lions tour year. Because let's be honest, England...
But that feeds into it. This is a Lions tour year.
I'm criticising their model, yet they won the championship the last couple of seasons. So I realise that I've got to try and qualify that. It's on the back of the Lions tour year, where the English players have got to get back into the games for their clubs who employ them. The English Rugby Union don't employ them. The clubs employ them. So they've got to get out on the field and front up week in, week out for the club owners. And obviously then when they're lucky enough to be taken out of that for England, then they're obviously expected to peak there as well. So, you know, that's a little bit more difficult on the back of, you know, a couple of tough seasons and a Lions tour, you know. And already we've seen a couple of Irish boys, you know, like Sir Sean O'Brien, who's had a fantastic Lions tour, just find it a little bit trickier to keep the fitness levels on the back of a Lions tour, you know.
Yeah, just on the point there, Mike touched on about clarity and maybe the comparison between this group and the 2009 group, and you would have been in and around the squad and in and around that group of players. Does it seem like it's a very different set of maybe emotions in that dressing room? Like, maybe I'm taking this up totally wrong, but you look at the group that were there in 2009 and somebody like Paul O'Connell, whereas maybe this is a far more clinical group. The leaders within this group are far more clinical than that 2009 group. Like Johnny Sexton, I just don't see him doing the big emotional speech tomorrow. It's all about do your job, do your job, do your job.
Yeah, it's funny, because having a chat with one of the lads earlier about this, in terms of that 09 team you were thinking of, there was very strong personalities and there was a lot of unique, so like the golden generation, really, some of those players that were there.
And John Hayes and Tears of the Anthem.
Yeah, and but then you kind of, now it's all very much around Joe, you know, like Joe is kind of central to everything that... the success of Irish rugby at the minute. But within that, then there are some unbelievable characters that are stepping out. You know, now you have Johnny Sexton, obviously, but then you have your own, like, you've got Keith Earls, who's lighting up. James Ryan, who's just come, like, he's only, what, 21, is it? And he's just really just come on in leaps and bounds. But then Rory Best. So there's still those sort of unique characters that I suppose the kids can kind of relate to or look up to in terms of their role models. But I think Joe Schmidt is going to get a lot more the credit for how he's brought Irish rugby to this level and created that level of depth within Irish rugby.
So maybe, and without wanting in any way to do Declan Kidney a disservice, that as long as Ireland had a very good coach in 2009, they were probably going to go and achieve something. Whereas actually with this group of players, you need somebody exceptional to get the best out of them.
Well,
not just anybody could get this Irish team to this level.
You're talking about two exceptional coaches anyway. Mm. You know, let's be honest, Declan's record stands up to, you know, his CV is superb. So he's an exceptional coach, end of story. Joe's an exceptional coach as well, and has already proven that whatever happens on Saturday, St. Patrick's Day. Obviously, he was a Welshman originally. I just want to remind you of that. St. Patrick was a Welshman, so... I throw that one in and wait for
the Welsh marching down the streets, though,
and wait for the letters to come in. But you know, I think that the whole point about this year's sort of campaign, what is highlighted over the last year, couple of years, and particularly this season, is the depth and the quality of the players coming through. So you know, when you move it on from the era where, say, Declan was, there's probably a little less depth. Now there's, you know, the under 20 teams have been going to World Cups for a number of years. There's academies have been set up and are thriving, and you know, there's far more depth. So when we've had injuries now, there's guys coming in left, right and centre that might not have been able to happen perhaps in 2009, I don't know. That was a pretty stable team, if I remember. And you know, if you're going to win a Grand Slam, and along the way you're going to pick up a number of injuries, and you've got to be able to cover those. And I remember we, again, going back to 2005, I'd played Rhys Williams on the wing quite a bit, and he got injured. So we didn't want to give a little bit of advantage to Ireland, so I didn't declare he was unfit till the last minute, 20 minutes before the game started. So I had Rhys out running round with us, but I'd already named the team internally. I'd named Rhys in the press conference, but I'd had Mark Taylor named internally, and I told Mark he's playing on the wing, who was normally a centre. And we just didn't want to give Ireland anything that they could pick on that was a centre playing on the wing, if you know what I mean. Mind games. So 10 minutes before the kickoff, we made the change, put the team sheet in, and Mark Taylor starts the game on the wing, and Kevin Maggs tackled him 20 minutes in. And as he picked him up, he said, "Hey, Mark, what are you doing here?" So Mark performed superbly on the wing, and you know, but we didn't have a huge amount of depth. We had to play a centre there, but he did a fantastic job. But I think that, you know, what's really happened in Irish rugby, and the coaches obviously are exceptional coaches, my point is that, but there's a lot more depth as well, a lot more players they can pick. And I think, in fairness to Joe, and we've got to say, fair play, he hasn't been afraid to blood a lot of players and give them their head since obviously the Argentina game, where he felt he didn't have that depth.
Mm. You mentioned Keith Earls there, who's a player I'm sure you know well. His development, not just as a player, but really as a man over this last year or so, it seems to have been a pretty rapid change of character almost. Like he's so comfortable talking to the media. He's done so many press conferences, probably more than anybody during this entire campaign. Like, have you seen a noticeable change in him?
Yeah, I think now there's an air of composure around Keith. He seems relatively unfazed and just comfortable with where he is. And I think maybe off the field, if everything's going all well and good, that carries over on the pitch. And it just seems at the minute that like there is that composure that everything's going well for him, and it's great watching him now at the minute, actually from Japan, really from that tour. You know, he was, everyone was tipping him he should have been on the Lions tour back then, and his form has just carried right over this season. You know, it's great.
Yeah, Matt Williams is listening in. How are you, Matt?
Very good, guys. Nice to be on the show.
Yeah, thanks a lot for taking the call. We've been chatting a little bit about Ireland. I just want to, like, you've been covering every game for TV3. The clarity that Ireland have of what Joe Schmidt wants them to do, and it seems as though it comes across on the pitch as a simple game plan, but you know from the amount of work they're doing, it's anything but. Is that a testament to the sort of player management system? Are we seeing two very different groups in how they've prepared coming together here in terms of how Irish rugby can control their players and English rugby can't?
Without doubt, the Irish system has evolved and grown and become one of the best systems in the world, certainly the best in the Northern Hemisphere as far as the management of the national team. I'm only in Irish rugby because of the big fella sitting next to you there, Mikey Ruddock, who I came in and have known for many years through Swansea. And Mike and I can both tell you we've seen an incredible change. It's just indescribable how far the management and the preparation of the national players has come since the early days of professionalism at the turn of the century. And Mike's comment too about the depth is absolutely spot on. You know, we didn't have academies. The academy at Leinster was started when I was there, but I had almost nothing to do with it. It was just really some guys, our assistant coaches, trying to help some young guys out, and that's grown and moved forward into this great system that's around the country now. But I think more than that, the progress of the players and their attitude to professionalism, you know, has grown. You're not born a professional. You learn how to be a professional. And it's the same with the system. The system wasn't professional, has moved into being outstandingly professional. And so what Ireland have been playing is a very limited game plan, but they're playing it exceptionally well. And they're playing it with great thoroughness. So a few years ago when they won the championship, they weren't scoring tries, and it was not great rugby. This year, that team has progressed, that they're scoring lots more tries. They're seeing, you know, they're benefiting from the bonus point system. They're scoring close range tries where they're mauling a lot, close runners off the nine, and they're barging over. Now those holes mightn't be there tomorrow against a much more organised and disciplined England side than they were against the others, but the progression nonetheless has been pretty amazing.
Would you have any concerns then that if Ireland can't bulldoze their way through England, that they don't right now have another way of beating a team?
I would. I wouldn't agree with you completely. I think against Italy, now I know they're a very poor side and, you know, they couldn't tackle a fish supper. I mean, the Italian defence is just the worst I've ever seen from a major rugby side. But against Italy, they did have some plays in the 22 where they could get one or two passes in. And that created holes. There are holes in that English defensive line. They're still, you know, they're changing their centres, move Teo to inside, which I think he might be better at in the long run, but he's never played or has played very little rugby there. You've got Jonathan Joseph, who I think is a fantastic player, but has defended very, very poorly. So there's holes to be had. Now, we've got our own holes. You know, Ringrose has done a great job, but you know, Jacob Stockdale, for all the magnificent tries that he's been scoring, does get lost in the defensive system. There's no ways about that. He's still a work in progress in defence. Attackies can just sniff out a try in an incredible sense. So there are opportunities for Ireland, but they have to. That's the progression they've got to make this week. Those barging, close running tries, I don't think will be there this Saturday, and they've got to find another way to limit England scoring those soft tries that they've been letting in, and for them to find a way to score some tries besides just barging over.
And on England, I think it's 12 years since they lost three in a row in the Six Nations. Are you expecting Eddie Jones in their ears all week? They come a totally different England than we've seen over the last 2-3 weeks, out of the blocks, first 15 minutes, really getting at Ireland? Or actually, are the errors and the lack of discipline that we've seen over the last two games, are they so set now that actually a week isn't enough time for Eddie Jones to turn that round?
Yeah. You know, I'm sure Mikey and Ian are sitting there going, well, how can you predict? 7 weeks ago, beginning of the season, we thought England were the best, or, you know, everyone was saying, me included, England are the best team, Ireland the second best. They're going to have to do very, very well to beat England at Twickenham. And some of the tactical and technical work England have done has been appalling. I'm at a loss. Look, why did they come out in the first 15 minutes when they knew they had to score four tries in Paris just to stay in the competition, and they're taking 50-metre shots at goal? They're not kicking for touch. They didn't even look like attacking France till the last 15 minutes. So the question marks around what England will do are massive. you would expect a reaction. You would expect them to come out with a lot more aggression and purpose to what, than what we've seen. But it's very hard to say that the evidence is they're going to do that over the last few weeks. Remember, Wales should have beaten them. Wales were robbed at home, and they should have scored two more tries. So England technically should have lost the last three if the TMO had got the call right. So what is actually happening within that English camp? No one knows. The rumours that they're being overtrained by Eddie, no one knows. Eddie's management of this week has been poor. There's been a number of ridiculous situations occur that shouldn't have occurred. Now, Ireland, on the other hand, the week has been managed really well. They're progressing. So what's occurred, Ireland have got a big, big shot. They've got a chance. They can. It's not going to be a 20-0 they're going to come out and do it. This is going to be a really tight game. There's very few teams go to Twickenham and win a Grand Slam. I think it's been done once in the history of the tournament. The actual last game at Twickenham is where you've got to win a Grand Slam. I think someone told me France did it in the 80s. Now, for Ireland to go there and win is massive, but they have got a big, big shot of doing it because England are not playing as well as they can, and this is a good Irish side playing a limited game plan, but playing it really well.
Matt, thanks a lot for taking the call.
Pleasure, guys. Lovely to talk to you. Don't believe a word Mike Ruddock said. Nice talking to you, Mikey. See you,
guys. Come on, Matt. Cheers, pal.
You're responsible for Matt Williams.
Yeah. I brought Matt over. Well, Matt and I actually met first when I was playing for Swansea many years ago. And Matt met a very good friend of mine, Richard Moriarty, who was ex-Swansea and Wales international. Second row, went out to Sydney to play rugby, met Matt, and Matt came back and worked for a while with Richard in his electrical business. I don't know what Matt knows about electricity, but anyway, they were working together.
Matt doesn't know about electricity, isn't worth knowing.
I remember chatting to Matt, and he was training down in Swansea with us, so it was interesting that I sort of remembered my conversations with him. And then exactly what Matt said, when I was the first pro coach of Leinster, if you could call it pro, we had a sort of porter cabin on the side of St Andrew's pitch, and we had some weights in there. We had two or three professional players, the rest were, we trained three nights a week, Monday, Tuesday and Thursday.
Yeah.
We played in the European Cup, we played Toulouse, Stade Francais, Leicester. We beat Leicester in the European Cup twice during the time I was there in Donnybrook. Was that 8,000, 9,000 people? I was the only coach, and I kept saying to the Leinster branch, listen, we actually need a fitness coach, and we need a backs coach. And of course, before there was a Celtic League, as it was the first league,
yeah.
And before there was television money, because there was no television, you show the highlights of the European Cup, there was no real budget for professional rugby, So anyway, Matt came over to Ireland on a bit of a visit, and I asked him if he fancied hanging around to help me out, and he did, and fair play, and he did a great job. And when I left then to go back, the Wales Rugby Union asked me to do the A team, so I went back to do the Wales A team, and Matt took over and did a fantastic job there. But so that was the way that evolved.
We must get the two of you in actually someday and have a chat and sit and reminisce a little bit about that era.
Those early years, and when the game just went professional, some of the stories just from down in the Munster in terms of pre-season.
One comes to mind now. I won't mention the lad, but he played in the front row, and it was a standard contract, Ian. I don't know if you remember. It was like €7,500
for a season
for the pro player to play in the European Cup. You were some bonuses on top, but the standard part-time contract,
right?
I think it was €7,500, and one of the props came in, and I sat him down. I said, he came to meet me, and I'd asked him to come meet me about the contract. And he said, look, I want to bring my agent in. I said, well, you can bring him in, but you've got to give him 10% of your 7.5 1,000 because there's no negotiation. It is what it is, you know. And that was the early days. He saw, forget the agent, and he just went ahead with the 7,500, you know. So very different days. But we had some great fun along the way, and I could tell you a lot of stories. I'm sure Matt would as well.
Yeah, you put the building blocks in place for quite a legacy at Leinster. Yeah, here, listen, we'll definitely try and do that before Matt heads back, and because I think there are a lot of good stories, I imagine, from that era. We're short enough on time. We are here with our Saturday panel. It's brought to you with Air, the home of Air Sport. Get amazing live sporting content free with Air Broadband. I just want to touch then on Eddie Jones, and out of nothing, there's been more controversy this week, but just what's gone wrong for England, both technically, and I do wonder maybe with Eddie Jones and being a very abrasive character, and he wanted this England group to be very different to the Stuart Lancaster group, that there was this no more Mr. Nice Guy attitude, nobody's going to like us, nobody's going to like to play against us. Can that wear thin after a while? Does there need to be an evolution of a coach, that you come in, you set that in for 18 months, 2 years, but then you need to take it on to another level? And maybe actually Eddie Jones is standing still?
Well, who knows? There's all sorts of variables. I'll let Ian answer first. I'll give you my thoughts on it. You know?
Yeah, I think if you're looking at on the pitch, first you're looking at, he spoke a lot before the competition started about the injuries, and definitely that's played into some of the results. Big time, I think Billy Vunipolo is a massive loss. You know, he's huge.
But Ireland have had their injuries as well, and this is, they covered them.
Yeah, and then I suppose you also have to factor in maybe the guys in terms of the breakdown. I looking at some of England's breakdown work, I think they've big time struggled there in terms of the turnovers they've conceded and the numbers.
Sam Underhill hasn't been fit, has he? Because I thought he would be the answer to that if he was 100% fit, you know.
Is the problems they've had, and boy, they've had problems over the last two games at the breakdown, is that because of injuries and a lack of depth, or actually is it what Eddie Jones is asking them to do, not commit enough numbers to it?
They've had problems everywhere. They've had problems in defence. I mean, out wide, the Scots cut them to pieces.
Yeah.
They've had problems in the line-out, you know. Normally the English line-out, you'd bank on that being first class. So there seems to be problems all the way through their play. A lack of cohesion, I would call it, you know. And you just wonder, is there something going on a little bit deeper in the whole psyche there? And again, Eddie has left himself open a little bit this week with I always try as a coach never to give the opposition a team talk. Now he's made a few comments this week that could give teams a bit of a team talk. Certainly Wales, the next time they play England, will have a team talk. But also he's going to say to the guys, right, you've got to be very disciplined. And the guys are going to look at Eddie and say, well, hang on now, you're saying to be very disciplined and you've gone, you know, and said things that probably you shouldn't have said.
We've kept our heads down all week. We've said nothing. You're the one who's bringing all the controversy.
And you've added a bit of pressure to us, you know. Yeah. So it'll be interesting. I think it's a really big game for Eddie, and it shouldn't be, because he's won two championships. He's only lost two games. As coaches, we know it's inevitable that we're going to lose at certain times. What you want is a bigger W in your winning column than your L column. You know, at the end of your tenure, you want to say, well, I won more games than I lost. Ideally, you want to win cups. You want to win trophies. So Eddie's done that. But if these cracks continue on and off the field, then if Ireland put them away, you know, things could get very tough for Eddie.
Mm.
Yeah, it's actually interesting from that clip where the comments came out, I just happened to listen to it a bit more, and I actually thought it was quite fascinating, quite interesting, in the lengths that he was going to kind of develop leaders within the English team. And
what sort of stuff?
He talked about, like, there was one or two guys who were who said they were fantastic rugby brains, but they really struggled to kind of get their message across. So he was bringing them sending them to acting classes to help them kind of with their communication, you know, skills. So I was thinking that, like, that's quite a progressive coach, you know, who's kind of clear in his thought process, you know. So like, yes, he's the focus this week, but I think if you're a player from Ireland, it might just sharpen your focus in terms of, all right, Joe Schmidt's sessions are meant to be like all out intense, but this just might help you kind of with that focus. But come game time, I don't think it's done anything other than like what you've said. It's just put pressure, and from the media though on Eddie.
Yeah, yeah. And I think a couple of points that I can see what Matt made a point about, you know, there's a lot of barging, but a lot of teams are fanning out these days. The ruck law has changed ever so slightly in terms of a one man over the ball creates a ruck. So if you don't get the first shot in, Ian, as you know, it's very difficult then to compete for the ball. So sides are fanning out. So unless you get really early ball and real what I call green quality ball, 2 second ball early, it's very difficult to get outside a team now, isn't it?
Yeah.
So you have to go at them a little bit, you know, and ideally you want to run between defenders and get in behind them to offload. But if they're organised, you might have to go at them until you get that green quality ball that you can actually go a little bit wider on. But, you know, England have just been poor with their soak. They've been soaking in defence, which is unusual. They've been allowing teams to get in behind them. And Scotland did it and scored tries. So, you know, if Ireland go at them and they start soaking up like that, then Ireland will have a field day.
Yeah, yeah.
We need your predictions.
Oh, yeah. I go Ireland... 2 points with another Johnny Sexton.
More drama. Yeah. I don't think our hearts can take it.
Yeah. Well,
on St. Patrick's Day, what's it going to be, Mike?
Well, it's going to be a win for Ireland. I think that England will, obviously they'll be hurting after two losses. They're going to come out and they're going to be fired up and you're going to see a really good committed England performance, I think, for a while. But Ireland will ride the storm. And I think if there are some cracks in the psyche and the vibe of that England team, then Ireland will rip it open in the last 20 minutes.
Is Rhys over there?
I don't think he is. He's I don't think he is. No.
They don't travel the injured players.
No, he's rehabbing his hamstring after tearing one of the tendons off the bone. But thank you for asking.
Hopefully we'll see him before the end of the season, because, listen, it's not just a Grand Slam to play for. There's a European Champions Cup for Leinster still, which, yeah, hopefully he can play a bit of a part in.
Yeah, hope so. Thank you.
Mike, thank you for coming in. Ian, thanks a lot for coming up.
Thanks for having us.
Let's hope Ireland do it. So that is our Saturday panel. Loads more build-up to come between now and kick-off at Twickenham. We'll be back over to Andy Dunn and we'll get a taste of the crowd around the stadium as well.
The Saturday panel on Off the Ball.
In association with the Air Sport app, allowing you to cast your favourite sporting action from your tablet or mobile phone straight to your TV.